I think people dramatically underappreciate the severity of a very unlikely event, meaning that, yeah, it's true. You can spin the dice many times and not land on the bad number. But if you do, it's catastrophic to the point of kind of ending any thoughts you had as a family of multi-generational wealth, or even of paying for your own groceries for the rest of your life.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Mark, I don't know if everybody's really interested in this, but I just want to say, as a Texas Aggie, it's been a dark week for our baseball program. Have you been aware of this? And did this make it to your Twitter feed?
I don't know if I know this because you are like 20% of my Twitter interactions with shows up on my feed,
or right.
Would have seen it anyways. But yeah, it seems like there's been some nefarious dealings between the coach of the first time College World Series participant Texas Aggies and their arch rival, the Texas Longhorns.
It didn't turn out the best possible way that it could turn out. The sad thing is, you know, we would like to herald this guy that took us to the finals of the College World Series. I'd like to have a very good feeling about him for the rest of my life. But as one sports writer said, doesn't matter what he accomplished for our team, he will forever in our minds be considered a traitor, no matter what. We're just like, this guy's a lying scumbag. And so that's too bad. But it was really fun for a couple of weeks going far in the World Series. Oh, well, I just had to bring that up because it's part of my life. Just yesterday, I took down all of the, like, we have a flag out front of our house. We had took down the Aggie flag and now put up the American flag because it's time to move on. Trying to palate cleanse, move on. So let's palate cleanse and move on from our last episode we did, which we're in a sizable series. I'm thinking it might be about six episodes long, where we're talking about protecting your stuff. And you dudes who want to run your home and your dough like a biblical boss, protecting that which is yours is part of the deal. We went over that thoroughly in our introductory episode. Then you talk to us at length about how to protect the money that's come in the door of your home. You talk to us about some tips for investing, for budgeting, for looking at fees, for making sure that the money that's in our arms already doesn't just fritter away. So what we're going to talk about today is how to protect the money that we haven't yet made. We expect to come in and we want to make sure that it comes all the way in, the money that we're expecting to make.
Most of us, now I know this isn't true for everyone listening right now, but most of you listening right now are not players in the National Basketball Association. You're not NBA players.
Right.
And if you were...
Bronny James is, though. He's going to be a player in the National BA. And you know,
brother, you couldn't just... I wish I could screen share with you right now and I have Bronny James like contract negotiation details pulled up, because that's where I was about to land.
Oh my gosh, thing. I'm sorry. Okay, but, I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. All my point is simply, if everybody was an NBA player here, those contracts are guaranteed, meaning you sign any New York Knicks fan that remembers the old Starbury, Stephen Marbury, will tell you that you can sign a $100 million contract, break your body in half the next day, and they're still paying you all $100 million of that contract. So,
bro, let me take it back to Texas A&M one more time and say we've learned there's a dude named Jimbo Fisher. He signed an 8-year deal with the Aggies. Was it 9-year deal? He walked out the door. We fired him. We got rid of the athletic director that hired him. That guy got off scot-free, moved on to new lands. And Jimbo will be making an additional $70 million while he does not coach our teams or bring any value to us. It only hurts our bottom line, but it's guaranteed. So Jimbo will just keep cashing them checks. Sad.
Yeah. Well, most of us don't have these situations. We have not signed guaranteed contracts, which means if you have a W-2 job that you are just paid a salary, you could lose that job. You could lose it for poor performance. And the best way to protect against that is don't perform poorly. You could lose it because your company no longer can afford to keep you. Unfortunately, the protections that we have against those types of scenarios are mostly storing up for a rainy day. Work while it's summer, put some food away for times when the harvest is not happening. But you could also stop earning for other reasons, right? I think one of the things that would stop you from earning money is if you're dead. You won't be able to go earn money.
Good tip.
And so we're going to take a whole episode and talk about protecting physical capital. So yep. We can certainly take care of ourselves, but only the Lord knows what our last breath will be, when that will happen. For most of us listening, we have a lot of dads and grandfathers and things like that. There's people that depend on you for not only fatherly wisdom, but provision.
Yep.
And we're not going to do a whole insurance episode, but you can go out and trade a little bit of that income that's coming your way right now to ensure that if something happens to you and you're not able to continue bringing in that income, your family can have funds that would basically be the present value of whatever the future streams of income that you're expecting to earn might be. So life insurance, and when I say life insurance, I'm not talking about going over to your friendly Northwestern Mutual agent and getting sold some complicated whole life insurance policy that's a combination of investments and insurance product, and you can, you know, build up cash value and you can take loans against it. Fie on that. I'm not a fan for most people of permanent insurance products. There are cases where we use it in very high net worth individuals in certain scenarios. But for most people, what you need, if you're earning an income and you want to trade a little bit of it to make sure that, you know, you can basically make yourself one of those guaranteed contracts. Now, you're not going to be able to ensure like Jimbo did that if you just do a terrible job, you'll still earn money.
That contract is hard to find. Yes.
But if you get hit by a bus, your family can still benefit from insurance products. And most people are just dramatically underinsured when it comes to life insurance.
Can I just ask you, as a professional, what is a good frame of reference, a good thumbnail idea for how much to be insured for?
A lot of the times when I'm working with a family and we're looking at insurance, they might have some insurance for dad. Maybe dad's the only one who goes out and works, and they go, well, mom doesn't work, so we don't need insurance because she's not bringing in a stream of revenue. I would say if mom gets hit by a bus tomorrow, then dad's still going to have to go to work to basically feed the kids. And so mom has real monetary value that she's adding to the family, so much that if we look at the cost of hiring full-time household help for, I usually call it age zero to 16. So let's say there's little kids and we say dad's going to need somebody to help take care of those kids so he can go out and keep earning. By the time they're 16, they're going to be able to take care of themselves. You might adjust this a little bit up or down, but that's about $500,000 is what you'll need in a lump sum to provide for 16 years of household help. So I usually tell people, especially if they're young, when insurance is very inexpensive, relatively speaking, go get yourself a $500,000 life insurance policy on a stay-at-home mom. Because you're going to need some of those funds if something happens to mom.
If she's homeschooling, that number should be higher.
For sure.
I just want to double down on what Mark just said. It's so easy to think, oh, dad's bringing in 75K. So that's what his value is, 75K. Mom doesn't bring in any money. We don't need an insurance policy on mom. Are you nuts? She represents so much value. Think of food prep, think of house keeping, if she's that kind of domestic queen, any kind of schooling that she does. And as Mark said, childcare. We're talking about, just think about replacing those with paid people. We're talking about a lot of money. So I asked the question that I asked because of what you just said, Mark. People are radically underinsured. And I'm sad to report that people still die by accident when they're not planning on dying. And it's be real sad if the only time you found out that you were underinsured is when you got your insurance check and realized, holy cow, this isn't going to take us very far. So it'd be real smart for you to just spend a few minutes thinking about, now hold on, what would get us through 10 years? And that number is probably bigger than you think off the top of your head.
Yeah, and there's a few ways to calculate. Now, if we switch over to thinking about how much dad earns in this example, let's say he's doing well, he's earning $150,000 a year in salary. There's a few ways to figure out what we think we need for insurance. One way is to just go, well, if he wasn't earning that, and maybe we don't have much built up right now in the way of savings, retirement savings, things like that, we need a chunk of money that we can safely withdraw from what it costs to run our household. And so if we think about a 4% safe withdrawal rate, and we say, well, it costs us, let's say, about $75,000 a year to run the household. Well, we need about $1.875 million just to provide us with $75,000 a year of safe, regular income. And the kind of negative news there is that's not growing. So in the last episode, we talked about inflation. So we might need more than that so that it can grow and provide us, you know, if 75K works today, maybe we're going to need 125,000 by the time we're 25 years down the line. A lot of times I talk to somebody who makes 150 grand and they think, I've got $500,000 of life insurance. And I go, that's probably way, way too little. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people go, $2 million? I've never even thought about having that much money. But
right. Oh, it's such a huge number.
That's why I say most people are pretty underinsured when it comes to life insurance.
Right.
Insure yourself cheaply. I'm just going to plug it. We have no relationship with this company, but a lot of people, if they're shopping for life insurance, I send them to a website called policygenius.com. And it's kind of a marketplace that you can enter a bunch of information and it will shop a whole bunch of different companies and give you quotes on insurance. And most people that I send there are shocked at how affordable it is to get a $2 million policy, especially if they're 32 years old. So
yes,
check it out.
Okay. So this is life insurance. This is what happens. This is again, the money that you're planning on earning. How do I secure that for my family in case a piano falls on me as I'm walking down the sidewalk? Okay. What if you don't die, but your earning is hurt in other ways? What do you do there?
So believe it or not, life insurance policies are not the most commonly claimed.
Used. Yeah.
Used by people who are kind of in their earning years. Disability is a more common problem than premature death. And unlike dying, if you die, now at least we don't have to feed you anymore.
That's true. You don't need any new clothes.
Disability, however, we might not only still have to feed you, we might have to take a whole lot more medical care of you depending on the nature of your disability.
And replace your income.
Exactly. And so disability insurance, it's tricky because I just talked about how cheap life insurance is and people should go get it. Disability insurance is not cheap. You can get cheap disability insurance, and you should be very suspicious of cheap disability insurance because with life insurance, it's like pretty hard for the company to argue you're not dead if you're dead. But with disability, you could find yourself in court for a long time if a company wants to say, well, we don't actually think you're disabled, but you say you are. So this is one where I recommend getting some professional help and really walking through specifically what do you need. There's all sorts of disability insurance types. You know, surgeons have very specific policies. I'll tell a quick story because we have a friend who was, he's a physician, very smart person, was out snow blowing as we have to do here in Utah in the winter, using the snowblower. And he did the thing you're not supposed to do, which is the snowblower jams up and you think, well, it's not moving. So I'm just going to scoop out some snow. And so he did this. And the next thing he did was he made a phone call to his wife and said, honey, I need you to not be angry right now, but I have lost all my fingers. And I need you. I need you to come help me collect them and we should go to the emergency department.
Oh my gosh.
Miraculously, this fella still has function and they were able to reattach all those fingers, which is awesome.
He reattached his own fingers, Mark? This is the kind of surgeon is? He was awake, he anesthetized one hand and he sewed them back on with the other hand?
I think he had the kind that you just have to lick and stick back on. But yeah, so somebody who's doing surgery where if they even had a relatively minor injury to a hand, they might not be able to do their job, needs a very specific, we call it own occupation, a disability insurance that says, you hurt yourself and we are going to pay you your full benefit up until age 65. And you can even go get another job. You could go back to law school and become a lawyer if you wanted to. Make all the money you want. We're going to pay you based on this policy if you can't do this specific job. The other end of this is like an any occupation disability policy that says, if you can stand at the entrance of Walmart or sit in your electronic wheelchair at the entrance of Walmart and greet people, that's an occupation. And if you can do any occupation, we're paying you $0. One or the other might be okay for you. You just need to know exactly what you're buying. And these are way more complicated, like I said, than life insurance policies. And they're really expensive. Some of them you could easily pay $12,000, $13,000, $14,000 a year for certain disability policies. And so I tell people, if your employer is offering disability insurance, that's a great starting point. Say yes to anything your employer is putting on their benefits list that's free or that's covered by them. Beyond that, it's usually helpful to talk to somebody who looks at these types of policies regularly to figure out what do I need and how much should I really be paying for it.
Okay, you've said that a couple times now. I gotta say, can you tell me a company or who would I go to shop those things?
Yeah, I think if you talk to, we do this all the time with our clients, is we talk through disability coverage needs. And I like doing it with our clients because we don't sell disability insurance. I have some people who deal in those really expensive special policies.
Okay, what if you don't have a financial planner?
If you don't have a financial planner, you can go back to the Policy Genius site and look at policies. They also have disability options.
Okay.
But usually this is one of those cases where I would look to bring in somebody who you trust. And that could be a financial planner, but you might have a nephew that just got a job at a big insurance company and is selling these policies, and they might be a great person, but the policies they're selling might not be so great. So
yeah,
I really like somebody you trust who's also not standing to make a fat commission off whatever you buy.
The good old standby objective third party. That's what you want.
You want a fiduciary, Stephen. That's somebody who is legally obligated to put your interests ahead of theirs. And most insurance sales folks are not fiduciaries.
I don't want to get ahead of myself and get into my physical capital protection, but I just have to throw out, I don't remember if I said this in the whole grisly story I told about the car, but our insurance company, we have an agent that protects us, if you will, from the actual insurance company that insures us. and they act as a kind of agent or even a lawyer between us and the insurance company. Holy cow, what a luxury that is.
Yeah, having a team of people that can give you advice and help you navigate the sea of sharks that are trying to take a pound of flesh is worth something. It's worth some fees even sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I'm going to do a couple real quick. Umbrella insurance. Umbrella insurance is something that I can pretty confidently say anybody listening to this should pretty much have umbrella insurance. And all it is it is a separate insurance policy. You usually buy this from whoever sells you your home and auto policy. And it covers you for liability that goes over and above your home and auto policy. So if you lose control of your car and it spins off the road into a Starbucks and kills six people.
Whoa, good grief. What a headline, Mark.
Yeah, I should have put a warning if there's children in your car.
Gee whiz.
But you are going to owe more almost certainly in liability claims than whatever your auto insurance policy covers. An umbrella policy comes in and supplements that liability and says, we got you for a higher limit. Typically, what I tell people is insure your net worth up to about $5 million. After that, we start dealing with other ways to protect assets. But if your net worth is $3 million, I own a home outright that's $1 million, and I've got $1 million in investment accounts and across my other stuff, maybe it's worth $1 million. Okay, if you're that person, you would need a $3 million umbrella insurance policy. And I have friends who are lawyers who deal with these types of cases, and they've told me a little secret. They said, you know, when the insurance companies get together, when there's a big claim like this happening, and they see that the defendant has umbrella policy for a certain amount, and maybe their clients are saying, well, we really think the liability is $1.2 million. And the other attorneys go, there's a $1 million umbrella policy, and it would be pretty clean cut for us to just settle at the value of that policy. Oftentimes that is helpful for the insurance companies. They go, let's just settle for the value of the policy, and everybody walks away. Obviously, if you're paying out $1 million liability claim, something not great happened. The goal here again is to protect you, the assets that you've built up, and not have them wiped out because some freak accident happened. You know, it's not just driving. Amazon delivery guy slips on your steps and breaks his neck and can't walk again.
Jeez, Mark, these stories you're telling.
This is your issue, Mr. I didn't salt the steps.
We should have a prayer time after every one of your scenarios. These case studies you're coming up with are just gruesome.
Well, these are all fictional stories.
Okay. Nobody died in the telling of these stories.
Correct.
Okay.
I do feel like it's pretty reasonable to just call your home and auto agent and say, I want umbrella insurance. Here's how much I need. It's not like some of the policies we were just talking about where there's fat commissions. These are typically inexpensive. So I would expect to spend $200 to $300 a year for $1 million of umbrella coverage.
That sounds worth it. Have you ever written an article at Abraham's Wallet about this topic?
There is an article, and we'll put a link right down there in the show notes for those who would like to read more about umbrella insurance.
Of course, everyone would, because we want to protect the money that we expect to come in. So everybody wants to read these.
Can I just pause before I finish this insurance bit and say, I do occasionally run across people who question whether it's godly to even have insurance.
Let's get into this.
They go, you know, I just think it's a racket. If it was good for me, then the insurance companies wouldn't make a profit. And I trust the Lord to take care of me and my family. So I'm anti-insurance. I hear that from time to time. What do you think of that, Steve?
I'm not even touching it. I'm sitting back here with a smug little smile on my face. Can't wait to hear what you're going to say.
Well, the principle of insurance is the same principle that we talked about in the last episode, and we talked about diversification of investments. Saying that, you know, God's going to take care of me is not that different in this case than saying, I'm going to get wealthy if I love the Lord, so I'm putting all my money in this one company, and I bet it'll do great. Well, it might do great. Like we talked about the guy who invests everything in Apple. Well, it might grow and you might make money. But with insurance, what basically we're able to do is take the risk that we all face. In fact, we're guaranteed that trouble will come our way. That's something that we're told. And we can spread it out over large groups of people so that at least the financial component of those risks, like dying young or becoming disabled or running our car through a Starbucks, those risks can be spread out across a whole bunch of people. And instead of one person going from doing great to destitute when that thing happens, we can gather a bunch of people and say, we're all going to take a very manageable amount of money and diversify that risk across a large pool so that when it does happen to somebody in this giant pool, we're covered for that. I think people dramatically underappreciate the severity of a very unlikely event, meaning that, yeah, it's true. You can spin the dice many times and not land on the magic bad number. But if you do, it's catastrophic to the point of kind of ending any thoughts you had as a family sometimes of multi-generational wealth or even of paying for your own groceries for the rest of your life. So I think of insurance as just ultra prudent, and there's a ditch on the other side that says I want to insure so much that if something bad happens, I feel like I've had this unexpected financial blessing. No, we're not going for that. Yeah. But to just protect against the unknown is a part of wise stewardship, and being anti-insurance, I would say, is irresponsible for sure and sort of malicious towards your family.
Yes, I think it's presumptive to God. And I think that's another way of saying irresponsible. Let's continue our little break from insurance talk. You said something at the beginning about just maintaining your job. So you're at a job. We're trying to protect the money that you plan on getting. So why don't we just riff a little bit on staying employable, being the kind of person that they want to have at their company, whoever the employers are. I think that's a skill, and I think that's part of securing future income. Let's throw out some ideas. Here's one. I know a young man who's about to start full-time at a Chick-fil-A in Pennsylvania. I'm going to double down on my interruption. I'm going to interrupt my interruption and mention that a wonderful family from Pennsylvania just came to Cincinnati for a week. And their whole deal was, we hear you talk about your little community, your little wonderful little Jesus-y community out there in Cincinnati. Let's see what if it's really all that it's cracked up to be. No, they didn't have that attitude, but they just thought, sounds like a wonderful scene you've got there. Let's meet some of these families. So what they did was they just hit different families every day. They came to several of our kind of large meetings. We're about to have another large meeting tonight at a farm, if the weather holds off. And they just wanted to come to these things and see what we're made of. Well, while they were here, it was a great time, by the way. And they said that they benefited immensely. So I'm just throwing out there, you might be as zealous as these people. And if you want to come our way, I think we in Cincinnati are getting better at hosting these kinds of families and kind of showing them the town from a spiritual standpoint. Anyways, I'm talking to this young man, Eric, and he's telling me that next week he begins his full-time employment at Chick-fil-A. That's excellent. My number one reaction to that isn't, oh, they're Christians. You'll be around Christians all day. Maybe they'll play praise music while you're working in the kitchen. No, my reaction was, I can't think of a better place to learn customer service. So this is one of my tips. Wherever you are, get the training that they offer. P&G is here in Cincinnati. We offer a leadership training. If anyone wants to take one lunchtime a month, we could do a leadership training. Take it. It's like the free 401k match. They're offering you training. Take the training. And Eric was saying, one of the reasons I'm excited about working full-time at Chick-fil-A is if you work more than 25 hours a week, they will pay for you to take at some community college or a local public college. They'll pay for you to take classes there, business classes. Eric's like, I'm enrolling now in business classes while I start this job at Chick-fil-A. How smart is that? How smart is that for Eric's future earning? He is like putting out a call to the future dollar bills. Right this way, dollar bills. I'm right here. So I throw that out as a tip.
Yeah, I think that those of us who have worked in corporate settings kind of know who is there to pull the paycheck.
Yes.
We are the minimum required bar.
Yes.
And that used to just be like universally shameful. Like people were like, well, that dude's lazy.
True.
More and more, I have heard the younger generations almost speak as if that's a badge of honor.
Yes.
I am pulling my paycheck and I'm only working 8 hours a week for those suckers. And I would just say that is a misunderstanding and really a embarrassment when it comes to the value of work and excellence and good work. It's harpooning your chances of being an actual wealth generator in the long run.
Right.
And I just read this book. Our boys, Virgil and Daryl over at the Just Thinking podcast had made a tweet about Booker T. Washington's book, Up From Slavery.
Yes.
And I just finished reading it recently.
Was it hot, hot fire?
It's amazing. Go read it. It's short. It's like 150 pages. And he just goes on and on and on about the number one thing we're trying to do is slavery embedded in everyone's mind that work was bad and ignoble and not is something to be avoided at all costs. And if we're ever going to give people a chance to succeed, we need to embed in them that work is holy and good and noble.
Hear, hear.
So I think just don't be the I'm maximizing my ROI. And when you're 23, we've talked about this. That means if you're leaving the office at 4 p.m., but everybody else leaves at 5:30, probably something's wrong. Okay. Now you can work your way into a role where you are an owner and you do get to spend less time at the office. And I think you should, as a father, be thinking like, how do I set myself up to be in that type of spot by the time my kids are teenagers? But you should not be thinking that way when you're a new employee. You should be sucking up every bit of wisdom and training and experience. And even just there's value in working your butt off when you're young. So we've talked about that before, but I agree.
Yeah. If your attitude is I'm working my 8 hours and I'm getting out of here, then I'll just say, as an employer, you're the first one I'm going to fire because I'm looking for teammates who believe in this thing, who are like, they're looking out for how are we making our money. I got a friend that runs a landscaping company. Can you imagine a guy who came in that worked for a landscaping company who rode a mower most of the day, who came to the boss and said, I was considering our financials. I was considering how much it cost us to mow one lawn. And I'm looking at the numbers. I'm thinking, I think if we change the numbers a little bit here, we could maximize profits a little bit more here and here. It's not going to change how much money he makes. He's paid an hourly sum. He's just looking out for the company's interests. Do you think that the owner of the company might be thinking that guy has stood himself out from most of the guys that ride mowers all day? I think he has. So we're thinking, how do you set yourself up for those future dollar bills to secure that they're coming in?
And not only is the owner thinking, well, he's a good employee, and the owner starts going, if I don't create a path for success for that person, not only is he going to leave, he's probably going to start a business that beats mine. Because he's thinking on a level that, okay, we need a compensation plan that works him into a spot where this is a good place for him to be for a while. And so it can have pretty significant effects over time.
Yeah. I'm sorry to keep extending this. I keep having ideas. When there's a project, there's a new project that's happening, who volunteers for more responsibility? That's a great little metric. If you're the guy that goes, I would like some more responsibility. I'll take the time out. I've got my little dessert hobbies, if I can refer to an earlier episode. I've got some dessert hobbies I could borrow against. I'd like some more responsibility. You are setting yourself up. And by the way, if you are, again, securing future dollar bills, then every year there should be an annual review that happens with you. If your boss doesn't make an annual review happen, you make it happen. You say, I'd like to sit down with the boss and just like to review the last year. I'd like to get your thoughts on how I can improve. Here's what I observe. And you might have a list of, I was just thinking, I took this deal in this job, and then I took this responsibility for this project, and I kind of made that and that happen. I'm thinking maybe an 8% raise sounds good for this year. What do you think, boss? Like, that is exactly what we're talking about with regards to your taking care of the future dollar bills that will be coming in, because you're watching out for your earning potential. And you don't have to spend your life going up the corporate ladder. Well, someday you can be regional manager and all of that stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making the most where you are, being a kind of Joseph guy who he's shrewd where he is. He takes responsibility. And he looks out for the interests of his family. That's exactly what Joseph did. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, we zagged from insurance. I'm going to come back to insurance for one point, and then I'm going to finish with other ways that you could harm future streams of income that aren't related to things you can fix with insurance.
Okay.
The last insurance piece I wanted to cover, though, is health insurance. And this is another one, Steve, where I have some lovely Jesus trusting folks that tell me, now, Mark, the Lord's going to take care of us. If you've ever listened to financial gurus talk, which you have because you've been with us now for 44 minutes or so, you've heard somebody say that health emergencies are the leading cause of bankruptcies that happen, sort of come upon people quickly. And health insurance, for better or for worse, in the United States, is a requirement to protect you against that, unless you just happen to be so stupid rich that you could have a $3 million cancer treatment that was just no big deal for you. But for most people, it's going to be just wise to, again, diversify that risk of what happens if I need health care that's very expensive and I can't afford it out of pocket. There is a bazillion ways to go take care of health insurance. And this is one of those places where it's also nice to have an outside set of eyes. And this is something we do with our clients, is we say every year, show us the health insurance options that your company offers. If you're a small business owner, let's talk through what kind of insurance options do you have for yourself to provide to your employees. You know, there's alternatives to traditional health insurance, like health sharing ministries. Those have pluses and minuses for sure. But the goal is, how do we make sure that we've covered you in the event that some major catastrophic health event comes your way? How do we make sure that that doesn't wipe you out financially? And that could impact previously earned money, and it can also impact your ability to earn money in the future. And there's even behavioral components to this. So we don't necessarily want a young family to choose a health insurance option that's the cheapest, but when there's actual real health stuff that needs attention, they don't go to the doctor because they're like, well, we've only got the disaster plan. It's going to cost us $1,000 to take our kid in. We think about all of those things when we're going through somebody's coverage options and make sure, do you actually have a plan that's going to allow you to care for your family well without causing financial harm? And yeah, sometimes there's going to be a bill that we don't like, but for the most part, insurance allows us to offset some or all of that liability into a group where we can spread the risk out and make it non-disastrous. Okay. So we talked about insurances. We talked about trying to become the type of person that people want to pay more money to and not the type of person they're looking to, you know, I could, that sluggard who works at my McDonald's is always sullen and leaves early. And I just found out that they make a big iPad I can stick in the lobby of my McDonald's and I don't have to hire him anymore.
Right. Not only can I replace him, I won't have to deal with his crappy attitude as well. That's great. Let's get rid of him.
But there are some other ways that you can harm future streams of income headed your way. I used to do a fair bit of work buying and selling companies where we would go in and we would find a company that we wanted to buy when I was working for a larger company. And we'd start talking to the founders and figuring out all the fit stuff. And eventually you get into the nitty gritty details of negotiating the contract. And you want to say it, you can go ahead and say it.
You get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah. I knew that was going to be a part of this episode, but I remember talking to a founder once and we were going to pay him something like $20 million for this company. He started, it was an awesome company and there's an earnout period. So he gets some cash up front and then he earns like $1 million a year for several years to stay on and help the new combined company do well and all that. So he's going to make a whole lot of money and he's looking through the terms and there's things in the terms like, hey, if you commit one of these listed crimes, then we are free of our obligation to keep paying you because we don't want you as an employee. And he took a big red marker. Now, this is a guy that was really smart. I actually learned a lot from him. He's not a believer, so he might not have the exact same conduct codes that we do. And he took a big red marker and said, that is a non-starter for me. DUIs, I mean, I don't plan on any, but things happen. And things like that, because for most of us, getting into trouble with the law can cause you to lose your income. So for me, I'm a certified financial planner. If I went out and committed a felony, or even a misdemeanor that had anything to do with money, right, I can't be a CFP anymore. I have to tell my clients, hey, clients, market's doing well today. And also I lost my designations because I broke the law. I don't think that would have a positive impact on my earnings as a financial planner. And so, you know, my wife is a physician. She can do things that would cause her to lose her medical license. So that's something to be aware of.
Yeah.
And then there's a flip side of this. So those are behaviors that we're like, man, those are, we should not do those things. Agreed. Don't do those things. We also live in a culture today, Steve, where you can get in trouble for doing good things. Have you heard of this happening?
Yes. And while we're praising your wife in vague tones, I'll just say that her Christian stances up and against the industry that where she works have been so stellarly impressive to me. But what she has repeatedly said is, I will not compromise my faith or my discipleship to Jesus to serve this industry. Of course, we're not trying to lose our jobs or lose income. But yes, there's sometimes by doing good things, you can get into trouble. Yes.
Yeah. And so all I would tell people is be aware of where those zones are.
Yes.
Right. My wife is an OBGYN. We are a very pro-life family and we are not waiting until all of the, we don't wait until these situations where there's decision points happen to us to start thinking about what are the lines that we will never, ever cross. And anybody who owns a business now in our culture, there's things that Christians aren't going to agree with that are very popular culturally. And it's not something you should go, well, I guess I'm going to wait until somebody comes in and accuses me of something before I say, well, no, we aren't participating in that. Or we won't say these things that kind of culture is wanting us to say. I'm just saying, if you wait until you're in the middle of that situation to make those decisions, then you'll either be tempted to bend really far and go, well, I guess I could say that or do that or tolerate that. It's not me doing it, but I would just say, figure out what those lines are and be super clear. Like, if this happens, I'm willing to get canceled and I will lose income. And then also have a plan for weathering that. And if you're in the type of role, you know, if I don't know if we have anybody like this, if you're a politician and everything you say gets microanalyzed and you could stand on truth and lose your job in 2 days, well, you need to be much more thoughtful about the financial implications of that. And you probably, right. You don't need a 6-month emergency fund. You probably need like a 5-year emergency fund.
Yeah.
But you know, it's also fine if you manufacture widgets at a factory and your factory has a little rainbow flag they stick on the door in the month of June. You don't have to refuse to come into work. And you know, there's things that you should just think about. Well, I disagree with maybe what the owners of the business that I work for think, but I can do a great job. I can serve them. They can be activists all they want. I have clients that donate money to organizations that I personally don't like at all, but I can serve them with a clean conscience and do great work for them. Despite that, doesn't bother me, but I have to think about my own lines as a business owner. Here's things I won't cross. I'm just encouraging you to do that so that A, you don't jump and do something you afterwards go, I didn't really have to do that, and now I've lost my job. Or B, you keep bending and bending until you go, I don't look like a Christ follower anymore.
Yeah, it's a tough line. I could do 45 minutes on this subject easy, but I'll just want, maybe there are people that think, well, yeah, we have to take a stand everywhere we see evil or a lie. I just want to say, no, you don't. You don't have to do that. Now, if the Spirit of God in you won't rest until you say something, you got to obey him. But we have an example that I could love to go into detail on sometime. It's Daniel. Daniel served in Babylon, and he served the king of morons who served false gods, etc. And Daniel advised him. The same thing happened with Joseph in Egypt. He's serving a guy who says he's a god. Hello. And he didn't feel the need. Every time he puts out an edict, now everyone, I don't believe this. I believe in the Hebrew God. He didn't do that. He just wanted to be great at his job. That's what we see. That's enough on that topic. I just want to say that for people who think, if I really follow the Lord, I've got to scream it from the mountaintops every day, everywhere I go. You do not.
Right. The last thing, this is, I guess, disconnected from what we were just talking about, but it's certainly a way you can harm future streams of income headed your way. And we've talked about it in the last month on the podcast.
We'll talk about it again when we get to protecting your relational capital.
Getting divorced. So,
ding, 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 ding.
You're a dude listening to this, be prepared to hand over half of everything you have. And depending on your situation, maybe a whole bunch of the income coming your way in the future.
Yep.
In the form of alimony and child support and things like that. So getting divorced can be a significant hit financially. We wrote a whole article on divorce and money matters that we'll link to in the show notes. But it's something I've just been, we did a whole series on divorce on the podcast, and I still get people who call me up because they've for the first time bumped into those episodes and they're dealing with divorce in some way or another. And I would just say that it's for sure not the main reason not to get divorced is to not ruin your financial situation. There's just consequences on top of consequences to breaking that covenant. And it will harpoon your financial scene.
That's
so
right.
If for some reason you stumbled in here and you've made it this far and you're a guy who's like, well, I think I might be happier divorced. I just want you to play that movie, and it's on almost no level.
Oh my
is
gosh.
It probably going to be what you think it is? I don't think most of the people who even have divorce conversations around us are thinking like, oh, I'm just doing it because I'm going to really be my truest self. But in the event that that's you, and you're actually thinking this might be a better deal, it's probably not a better deal. So don't get divorced if you don't want to harm future streams of income.
Hear, hear. So, woof. A pretty thorough look at how do you protect the money that you plan on coming in. A lot of that is the way that you plan and think and behave in such a way that you will take care of those precious dollars that you assume are going to be coming in the future. That's it for taking care of the money that you expect to come in. Next time, we're going to talk about thinking multi-generationally about financial protection and protecting the money that I plan on moving on to future generations.